strong in the ball, who have been taunted and traumatised for over 37 years. This one is for you. Richmond, yes, Richmond are premiers. 5:13 p.m. on Saturday, September 30, 2017 is officially Tiger Time.
We never reconciled.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And it's Thursday, so honestly, we're probably looking forwards more than we are backwards. Are you excited for Riley Collier-Dawkins' debut?
Yes, the debut when you're having when the club has no other choice but to pick you. I thought the club captured the spirit very well with that quite humorous video of Riley the fake calling that RCD calling his parents, and yes, Riley's okay. Parents like getting missing banged. I thought that was quite an appropriate way to handle the debut.
Well, look, he's not the 42nd player on the list being chosen. Like, we have got a couple of injuries, but he's been picked ahead of Will Martin, who played a couple of weeks ago, and most notably Josh Caddy. And he's been an emergency what seems like a million times, but it's probably close to 11 times he's been emergency, which is, I'm pretty certain, a modern record for the most times a Richmond player has ever been in emergency before making their debut. So it's been a long time coming.
It has been a long time coming. I mean, if a first round pick gets, if someone who was a later draft pick in a later draft gets picked in front of a first round pick for their debut, it's pretty extraordinary. Like, you know, it's been a running joke amongst fans about his late debut, but you know, Josh Caddy isn't named as an emergency, so I think that's probably saying more about Josh Caddy too. So, you know, it is what it is, but now he's playing, it's not like he's getting an easy game to start in. So, it's definitely exciting. It's definitely better to have, if you're going to be challenged, then maybe in a bit of trouble, it's definitely better to be, to be young and give something different than necessarily to be rolling out the same old dregs.
Mm. Yeah, we've talked about this in pre-season, that the way the Richmond list and the pressure of the salary cap, you know, we kept the band together, all 22 people, players from last year's grand final team came back this year, and you inevitably lose some depth with the Jack Higgins, the Oleg Markovs, and yeah, we've got a couple of years worth of draftees now who've struggled to break into what's a really good team, and you know, Jack Ross has been perpetually just on the verge of the team all year. He's been named in the team, which is nice. Riley's been named for his debut, and yeah, it is an interesting debut that, you know, we talked about when we drafted him, that, you know, he was a player with some real strengths. You know, he's a big bodied inside midfielder. He's a dynamic athlete, which people will have seen from some of the goals he kicked in the 2019 VFL Grand Final, but he's struggled finding cheap ball on the outside. He hasn't really diversified. Like, he struggled a bit to play in positions other than midfield. Now, midfield's an extremely important role, but I think there is a hope that in time he could be useful as a forward. So yeah, it's definitely been a slow burn for him.
Yeah, look, you know, and there's, you're going to the structural issues of us keeping everyone around. So that meant that we lost some of our salary cap, because of the salary cap, we lost some depth. And, you know, it's also a question of opportunity, but both those guys weren't really, you know, we've got three of our first choice mids out, and depending how generous you feel about Jack Higgins as a midfielder, which I'm not particularly, we didn't lose our midfield depth. The biggest problem with our, you know, midfield is, you know, partly that we're drafting late, and we've been trying to draft midfield replacements, but, you know, we're drafting late in the draft, and thus far Thompson Down and RCD haven't turned out, and that doesn't mean they won't.
It's very early to say for, you know, Thompson Down had a few flashes last year, and he's been injured for the start of this year, unfortunately, after some decent form in pre-season. I'm like you.
This is Riles'
moment. I'm excited to see him.
Well, yes, absolutely. It's an interesting time to debut, but it has to happen sometime, and it's better because there's still upside there.
Definitely.
So, look, we do need, speaking of, you mentioned Chip Paul on the outside, I think we really should mention the Melbourne game.
I was going to say that what it seems less than ideal that here we are the day before a game against the team on top of the ladder, and our best player and the best player in the competition is in another country. I think that possibly summarises how the Melbourne game finished, if not started. I quite enjoyed the first quarter.
Yeah, so look, I think without going into too much depth, it probably, and sometimes I think we're a bit kind about some of the metrics when we talk about more about bad goal kicking when it suits us and when it doesn't. But look, you know, considering everyone thinks we got flogged, which we did, I think it is fair to point out that actually on the expected shot metrics, we only lost by 3 points. The inside 50s were fairly, we did shoot pretty badly early on. Yes, there was that awful run in the second quarter. And we'll come to a bit all the bad things we did. But there was this genuine case that the game wasn't quite as bad as the abject disaster that we all think it was, that we all thought it was on Saturday night.
No, plus 4 on inside 50s. Now, part of that was, you know, we'd have periods where we'd bomb it long, and Melbourne would kill the ball. Like,
oh, no, I mean, they were definitely rope-a-doping us. They were, they had a game plan where they were conceding inside 50s to an outnumbered, where they hoped to outnumber us in the back line. So, like, it was partly their game plan. But, you know, that game plan doesn't always work.
No, and it's unusual. We, actually, both sides had really high numbers of intercepts. We had a lot of tackles inside 50, which is normally a metric of things going pretty well for us. But sort of flip side to that, mentioned about their defence. So we, you know, if you think of, you know, our starting forward setup is Jack, Lynch, Lambert, Castagna, Arts, and Rioli, you know, and Dusty, sopping with Lambert. And those seven guys had 3 goals, 3 between them. Like, that, we're not going to win games against pretty much anyone with that sort of output.
No, and that was partly a function of Melbourne's game plan and partially a function of output. But, I mean, something that sort of really stands out in the game is, is just the absolute domination of their midfield on the cheap stats. You know, the contested ball we did lose, but by 9, but, you know, we lost overall disposals by 95. Yeah. which is, you know, it is, and there's multiple in some of our losses that we've conceded a bit, even against a high possession team, we've conceded an unusually high amount of disposals for them. So they did. It's happened to us before, as we point about the Swans game, but you know, there was a game plan that they executed a game plan well against us.
Yeah, we had three more marks inside 50 as well.
Yeah, exactly. Like there is a, as bad as it looked, there is a, you know, it's perhaps not the abject disaster that it felt and looked on the scoreboard.
Yeah, it when it got ugly fast and in an unpleasant fashion, and you know, and as is sometimes the way when things start going wrong, they don't stop going wrong. You know, Mansell gets injured, Dusty gets injured, Lambert's injured, like doesn't rain, it pours.
Yeah, and look, to put more nuance on this nuance, we did as far as sort of missed shots, we did have quite a lot in the last quarter, so partly we sort of fought back in garbage time, but on the other hand, we had no rotations then and an empty bench, so and that in itself wasn't completely without merit. But look, so yes, it was a bad game. It was beaten in a game style that we've troubled with before. I thought Dimmer was completely right when he said that we went to a very wet game when it was just a bit damp, which it felt like that at times.
That was quite clever, I thought.
Yeah, I think we did that against Collingwood in the 98 final that we lost too.
I don't remember that game.
Fair enough. So I apologise. Didn't exist. So yeah, I mean, just quickly sort of going through the negatives before, I don't want to dwell on it too much. Like, it is a big worry that Cochin only had 12 possessions in a game where that their midfielders were absolutely carving it up. So, you know, that is genuine concern.
Is he fit?
Well, it's multiple bad games in a row, isn't it? So
he got coaches' votes last week.
Yeah, yes, he did. But, like, was he actually that good? Or was it just one of those random things where the coaches' votes, you get these weird coaches' quotes? And he's had, if you take his last four games, I think his last game, which he wasn't that good, was by far his best. He has had a good game this year, but yeah, he's had multiple bad games in the last 4 weeks. I think Dermot Brereton said it once that, you know, old players are judged unfairly. That when old players have a few games, when a young player has a few bad games, they're out of form. When an old player has, it's because they're washed up. He was saying that in defence of old players. So I'm not going to say it's because Father Time's has come for Cochin, but yeah, it's definitely over a multiple weeks, or an average of multiple weeks, he's out of form.
Yeah, it's not ideal.
yep.
To say the least. If you want to think about a positive, and I'm not entirely certain that we've mentioned before that when your defenders are leading their possession count, it's not a good sign. Career high for Liam Baker. And actually close to a career high for Shea Bolton as well. Are you stressed that he's not under contract?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the interesting things this week. I wanted to ask you about your thoughts on that, because I think Richmond, when Ralph Carr puts off negotiations to the end of the year, I think, okay, it's only two high-profile examples, but I think Richmond supporters are right to sort of groan inwardly and sort of clench up a bit, because Shea was very good on the weekend. And right now, I think just off the top of my head, he's between the 30th and 40th best mids in the AFL rankings. And, like, the AFL rankings aren't perfect, but they're a pretty good measure of quality when it comes to an attacking mid. A mid that's, you know, it's primarily contributes on the offensive side, which is what Shea does. So, you know, that's pretty good. And obviously, you know, on the weekend, I think it's fair to say he looked like I would have said he was our best player. So, well, Nick, hypothetically speaking, it does turn a bit nasty, and you know, frankly, let's hope he doesn't. He just resigns, and we don't have a big fuss because you know I really like him and he's fun to watch. What do you think he's worth on the open market?
Well, the question is always, how difficult is he to get? So he's not a free agent, and you know, so you're going to have to trade for him, and so the cost is going to be high. Like the precedent for this type of young emerging player, it's at least a high draft pick, if not two high draft picks. He's leading the team in clearances, actually. It'd be pretty. The ideal outcome is, you know, holds out to the rest of the year. He plays really well, and he agrees on a slightly below market contract to stay with Richmond because he's been happy and productive here. Anything else is going to be stressful and painful.
Yeah. So just looking at it, his clearance stats, which from clearance stats a little bit misleading because we don't have a lot of clearances as a team in general. But if you say center clearances, which are a bit fairer because, you know, every team has, especially Richmond, has about a normal amount of center clearances. Like, he's actually our best center clearance player. He's not in the top 20, which is a reflection of our center clearances are quite distributed over him, Sheds, and Dusty. But, yeah, I mean, he's not a great clearance player, but he is, as you point out, quite good and technically our best right now. Also, as I said, they're fairly evenly distributed at Richmond. The question, I guess, and I've said this to you offline, is he's relatively young for a good clearance player, but does he – I guess the thing – do you – like he's in a contract year and he's obviously playing really well and it's his best year and it's just the question is, do you give him – like, is someone going to give him a huge contract on the assumption that the graph's going to keep going up? Because often a midfielder at his age would get a huge contract on that basis. Or are people going to think, yeah, what you've got is really good, but this is as good as you're going to get because of your body shape? And look, frankly, Nick, I don't know. But that's the questions I'd be asking because, you know, Zach Williams got $900,000 a year last year. There's crazy money out there.
He was a free agent, so he was available. And it is the cost of getting players from other teams is normally, unless they're in a distressed asset situation where, you know, Dion Prestia or Tom Lynch take less money to leave the Suns, and you know we've seen that with quite a few Giants players. As well, but normally you've got to pay more than the other clubs to attract a guy. So you're the one who believes him in the most. And I think if you just focus on what he does well, you know, he's an extremely dynamic athlete. And so if you're a team, you know, who's a bit plodding in midfield, you've got a lot of maybe one-paced guys and you're looking for someone with a bit of X factor. I think you do drop a bag for him, but it's a tricky situation.
I think to borrow a phrase of a friend of ours, he's an icing player rather than the cake player. And if you do have sort of plenty of dull, woolly-style sponge cake mids, like a team like Essendon, something like him who adds a bit of, as you say, X factor, does make sense.
Yeah, and he's a 22-year-old who's played well in two different final series. It's not hard to make your case.
A little bit scary. I'm not sure this is really helping my general worldview.
No. Was this the most Toby Nankervis game of all time?
Yes. Well, it's sort of a 2017-18 Toby Nankervis game.
Not a 2019 world-destroying in the finals Toby Nankervis. But in,
oh, 220 even more so.
Yeah, sorry.
We're both thinking the same thing. Do you want to break down the numbers?
Yeah, so if you just look at his contribution, it's 22 disposals, 7 clearances, 5 inside 50, 15 hitouts. That's fantastic, except the Max Gorn and Luke Jackson had 40 disposals, 42 hitouts, and 2 goals between them. And part of that, they were playing forward. And I was annoyed that Luke Jackson, who's a player I've liked for a long time, had his career game against us. But yeah, they were really good.
Yeah, well, they were Melbourne's 2 highest rated players by most of the measures. By the AFL rankings anyway, and by the champion data rankings, they are very high as well. And Nank was our best player, but as you exactly said, like by any sort of reasonable measure of the one-on-one output, Gorn was the best. Nank lost to Gorn, but you know, it was, as you say, a Nank, very Nankish game, in the sense that it wasn't a complete disaster. He counterpunched enough so that although he was beaten, he was not carried out on the street. It was a points decision. The hitouts to advantage were 20-16, and 20-5, and Nank only had 2, so 3 were won by Pickett and others. So
Pickett's only down for 1 hitout, although he definitely had 1 centre bounce that was where he jumped over Gorn. That was quite the highlight.
That was kind of amazing. If you watch that, he jumps too far and he just touches it with a hand. He probably wasn't expecting to touch it, and I think he just hits it anywhere so Gorn doesn't get it. And then he rows it himself because he's such an amazing athlete. He lands on his feet and picks it up. It was quite the athletic feat. I'm not sure how often that's repeatable. It was quite the highlight. And, you know, he was actually one of our top-rated players too. He had 21 disposals, which, as you know, is high for him. And he was rated on both the rankings and the champion data. He was our third best player.
Yeah.
Fourth.
Look, I haven't checked the ratings, but I would have thought other than a completely uncharacteristic miss in the first quarter, I thought Shane Edwards could be proud of his work.
Oh yeah, he was. He was one of the top ranked. Surprise, he always is. But yeah, he was our best rated, best or second best player, depending on how you measure it. 14 contested possessions, not a huge shock. By the way, Nank had 19 contested possessions, which is just crazy, isn't it?
That's a lot. Yeah,
and 7 clearances himself. Incredible numbers. But he got done around the ground because he was playing against some. I mean, Gorn is right now the best ruckman in the AFL according to the rankings. So, you know, he was playing against the best. Shedder was very good. He remains evergreen and in the later stage of his career.
I liked Mansell's game before he got injured, unfortunately.
Yeah, so did I. I think people who sort of are on Richmond Twitter saw the bit of a stink and where Pickett kneed on his head, very Tom Lynch style. He remains tough and feisty and he's fun to watch.
Yeah, and I was glad he seems to have backed up this week.
Was picked. Mm. Yeah.
So we didn't drop anyone this week. We only had Lambert and Dusty as the outs. Although and then one of Naish Martin, Callum Coleman Jones, or Rioli, Morris Rioli Jr. Will be the sub. I don't know. Do we? I know we talk about the sub a lot, and this is skipping forward to the Bulldogs. But how do you feel about a debutant as a sub?
Yeah, I was wondering that because they're really sort of it's in a position where because you're not going to pick CCJ to be the sub. So it surely is it going to be Naish? It seems like the
He's got some like he can play as long as he's outside. He can play half back or wing or half forward. And you get you get somebody else to play more inside. So yeah, maybe he's the choice, and that'd be
I actually think it'd be quite good. Potentially a bit of from long experience with the old sub. It's often good to have an outside runner in that role. So I would be totally fine with that. I think Arts Arts' pressure acts were decent, but I think the hand hovered over the Arts being that for quite a while at the selection table.
Yeah, Marcioli Jr. wasn't as good in the VFL this week, unfortunately, and what was a pretty tough loss. But yeah, so I think I'm sure given that Maurice Rioli Jr. is in the squad, I'm sure the topics come up. But definitely one to watch closely.
So the last thing, Nick, I just wanted to recognise in the game is that Jack Graham, I know this is a broken record, he had an extraordinary amount of pressure points, 98, which I think... It's a single finger, it's a double figure column. So I don't think they even have space if he gets to three figures. And he was two off, and he had 11 tackles. His pressure work remains incredible, and he's currently leading the AFL in the slightly different pressure axe measure that they use. It's called pressure axe, which is a different scale to pressure points that I'm quoting. But yeah, he's leading the AFL in it. So yes, he does remain incredible in his ability to rack up pressure statistics.
So sort of summarising the Melbourne game, what's your worry level on a 1 to 10 scale?
For the season, not too much. There's one other thing I wanted to mention. A lot of Richmond supporters are feeling like the umpires are very much out to get them this year. And other people have pointed out quite rightly that we've had the umpire, we're almost always near the bottom of the table and the free kick differential. Well, guess what? The conspiracy theorists are right. This year, we're currently at -7.5 in free kick differential, which is worse than the AFL. But even in other years when we've been right down the bottom, like we're consistently in bottom three or bottom in free kick differential, but say in 2017, it was -2.5 was the free kick differential versus 7.5 this year. It was -3.5 in 2020, slightly shorter quarters. So you're getting the free kick differential has never been as bad as this year. The conspiracy theorists are right. We are getting jobbed by the umpire.
They are out to get us.
Yes, this year. So back to the general thing, the level of look. It's worrying. We haven't fallen behind. We've had mediocre starts of the year, but we haven't fallen behind the win-loss column, which we are, according to the bookmakers, going to do on Friday night. So I'm worried, but I still think, like, the overall metrics were still sort of positive on a lot of key metrics. We're still winning things that Richmond teams win at. So I still think we can have a good year, but I'm sort of short-term extremely worried, longer-term more optimistic, I guess would be my summary.
Yeah, I think I'm in a similar place. I'm wondering if, some combination of the rule changes and Nick Vlosten's absence and maybe even a little bit of second-year blues from Noah Bolter. But, yeah, the defence is a bit of a worry, but... Yeah, overall, I still have faith in the structure.
Yeah, I mean, I do like the I do like the analysis that, you know, we just want to win from seventh for, you know, to get a different
different field. Challenge.
Yeah, and look, it's easy. You know, if you're a hyperbolic commentator, you could say that they're old and slow and lost the hunger. I don't think the evidence is there yet to do it. I mean, we would do that anyway. We're a fan podcast, and we also love these guys. If Cochin doesn't start playing better soon, that's a real problem. Like, we need another inside mid. But that's the sort of systemic thing I can see that the evidence is there. But again, it's a small sample size, and the team's not playing that badly overall. The sort of the relative form isn't great. Our wins have tended to come against awful teams, and so, you know, that's a slight cause for form, but you don't get carried away about relative form. So, yeah, and we've got a lot of injuries, so we'll see how it goes. But this Friday could be nasty.
Yeah, could be unpleasant. Look, before we talk about the Dogs some more, just to mention the VFL quickly, they had a tough game as well. Although, shout out to Xavier Clark, who's homeless person's beard is not similar to my own at the moment.
yes, exactly. Like, he's got a beard very like yours, which would be perhaps a nicer way of saying it. But yeah, a bit disappointing, wasn't it? But it was weird. Broken record. So RCD had a much slower possession game, so he's basically been picked for the game the week before, where he was leading possession getter halfway through the third. You know, CCJ still continues to take good contested marks. I was actually slightly surprised he didn't get picked on the weekend. I reckon if Pickett hadn't been doing such a good job as second ruck, that CCJ
this week. I'm sure he'd be in a second. You know, 18 disposals, 29 hitouts, 9 marks and a goal. Like, that's a very tidy line. And, you know, his contested markings, just fantastic at the moment.
Yep.
But yeah, he's a big, strong, relatively slow dude. Like, it's just hard to have too many of those guys in the team.
Yeah. And it'd just be really interesting to see what happens if we gave him a shot. But we'll see. It might happen next week. Nash got a ton of the ball.
Yep.
Probably also, again, leads credence to the idea that he might be sub on the weekend. And Will Martin had a very glass half-full game with the 14 contested possessions and the glass half-empty game. It's quite extraordinary that a mid can only get 2 uncontested possessions in a game, because he only got 16 in total. So it was quite the stat line, which bears further thinking. But it's good he can get it. Getting it's a skill, and you can work on your outside game, but yeah, good for him.
I should mention, look, he didn't have that much impact on a wet day, but Samson Ryan's goal off the ground is, like, you can see why there's some hype around him. Like, it's also easy to see flaws in his game, but there's so many McBean flashbacks.
I was going to say, Nick, I just think it was... Yeah, it's almost eerie how close the flashbacks are. Like, I don't know how to take it. Like, I'm a little bit sort of
look. He is quite a McBean was always a forward, whereas Ryan was drafted primarily as a ruckman who's doing a respectable job pinch hitting in the ruck. So there are some differences, but yeah, he's a coordinated athlete. A skinny one, but coordinated.
Yeah. Look, you don't want to go too far on the comparisons, but, you know, his ability, his sort of... We haven't really seen him ruck all day yet, so we don't know what he's good at, what he's like at his one wood yet at the VFL level. But, yeah, his ability to not be good at the tall guy stuff in the forward line, but really good at the small guy stuff, it is, yeah. It's quite eerie. So yes, good for him though, as you say. And I think Zav said it was going to be mark of the goal of the year in the VFL. So good on him getting behind his charger.
It's a really impressive goal. Look, though, he didn't have as much impact as we mentioned, Martialli Jr., but he still crushes dudes. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, speaking of a one-word, he's definitely got one.
Yeah, very much so. Bulldogs. Top of the ladder, percentage of 175. They're playing really well. Their midfield's been fantastic. They're a very good clearance team. They're conceding not very much, like dominating inside 50s, even marks inside 50s, which haven't often been a strength for them. Like, yeah, it's a they're winning turnover battle as well. Like, having a really good year, not surprisingly.
So they have 4 players in the top 10 of the AFL rankings.
Yeah. That seems like a lot.
I've never seen that before. And they've got Treloar's at 15. Now, one of those, Dunkley and Midley's out. So, you know, yes. And they don't rotate much through their mids.
Tim English is out as well. So, Stephen Martin's a solo show in the ruck.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, Martin's not young, and their mids are also unused to. They've just lost a key part of their rotation, and they're very sort of top end dominant in the way they play. Yeah. So I mean, they're helpful injuries. I'd be much more confident if we hadn't just lost Dustin Martin, and then the only one of our two players in the top 50 of the AFL rankings.
Our record without Kane Lambert in recent years is not great either.
Yeah, like, I mean, to be very frank, it's a threadbare looking midfield. You know, the cumulative injury theory that it's injuries are worse when you get multiple at the same position.
When they stack up, yeah.
Yeah, and that's, they've really stacked up at this point. And as pointed out, if ever the skip's going to pull one out, it's got to be this week. There's a lot to worry, and speaking before about how Melbourne just racked up the possessions on us, that's what the Bulldogs do every week, and so it is slightly frightening that they do seem to have the game plan that's the one that we seem to be most troubled by.
It's interesting. They've shown you the Giants game on the weekend of, you know, they'll have periods of sort of stalemate, and then, you know, they've kicked 9 goals, 3 in the final quarter on the weekend. They've had a couple of games like that. I think the Eagles as well, where you think, are they in some trouble here? And then they explode out of the box. Out of the blocks for a period of time. You know, the Liberatore's playing well. McRae's winning a ton of ball. Caleb Daniels back in defence. Aaron Norton absolutely killed us. Was it last time we played them?
We fought them last time we played them, and I've got idea.
It was the time before, yeah.
I've got no idea who's going to play on the bond.
But we don't tag.
We don't. We never do. That's, in fact, it's a silly comment. Like, really, the only place is right at the key ends of the ground, the ruck is where you tend to get defined matchups, but. Speaking of which, Nick, on the upside is our slightly underperforming forward line, at least from last week. It's a big challenge for them, but the Woolies back line is not great.
No, that's true. Like Zane Cordy's no world beater despite being a premiership player as a key back. Maybe Easton Woods, not the player he was. During their premiership year. I mean, it is It is. They are such a strange team of, you know, to have such an incredible premiership, not quite come out of nowhere, but pretty similar. But then, you know, they haven't won a single final since. Of course, you never, they can never detract from the memory that's as special as that. But yeah, I reckon it's been an odd experience being a Bulldogs fan the last couple of years. Although, you know, I can also see why they're well up and about this year.
Yeah, absolutely. We've commented on this before, but yeah, it's quite an extraordinary history they have. Finished the Bob Murphy book recently, so I'm slightly more sympathetic towards them. Good book. There's a beautiful line in it where he says, I wasted my childhood dreaming about what it would be like to play at the MCG on a Saturday afternoon in the dying light when the game's in the balance. And then I did play, and then I did do that. It was even better than I dreamed, which I thought was a lovely sort of tribute to football. But I digress. Nick, last thing I just wanted to ask you about, you, of course, would have seen Dimmer going off the top rope in the defence of Tom Lynch.
I did. Yeah, good on him.
Good on him. I thought the mention of the ninth was a bit of a low blow because, you know, there is a decent chance we'll finish ninth this year. So, but the rest of it was I appreciate what he was trying to do.
Yeah, and I think it would be reasonable to point out that since Tom Lynch has arrived at the club, we played in seven finals, and the only one of those we've lost was the only one that he didn't play in. And we would have quite possibly won if he had played. So, yeah, I have absolutely no doubt of where Tom Lynch sits in his contribution to the Richmond Football Club in a pretty short space of time.
Yeah, I mean, the sort of I'm sort of attracted to the analysis if he never gets another kick, he's done his job. As much as it will hurt in years to come with the salary cap. But yeah, he's, you know, and this was Dimmer's exact point where the stats don't matter. But and I know you did this analysis a few weeks ago, but he is now sort of, he's sort of a bit below his career averages on most of the measures, including competitive marks and goals. But you know, again, small sample size. Yeah, Jack's kicking a lot,
and it's not much. Yeah, and Jack's been in great form, and you know his role in providing a contest for players to work off. Like, yeah, it's extremely valuable.
It is. I mean, it's definitely better to make the case when you're winning, though. You know, it's the argument he's a system player that is sacrificing his game. It's best made when you're on the top of the mountain or have recently won it, like we have. One to watch. It'd certainly be good for him to have a breakout game and kick three or four this week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely so.
And thank you, Captain Obvious.
Yeah. And you know, notwithstanding the years left on his, you know, he's got 4 years after this one on his contract. If he was a free agent again, would he get a 4-year deal? Yes, he would. Key forwards, ask Collingwood just how hard a genuinely good key forward is to get. Yeah. One of the stories that gets you from the Sunday to the Friday night in airtime.
Yeah. Anyway, it was good for Dimmer as well. He's getting feisty.
I like feisty Dimmer most of the time.
Yeah. Look, it's not that different Dimmer.
Crosses the line, but yeah.
Yeah, but it's different to have different Dimmer, right? Like, if he was doing it every week or doing the distraction technique every week, it gets tedious, but
doing a sheedy.
Yeah, doing a sheedy, doing a Chris Scott, doing the passive-aggressive, we had a good game plan, but the players just didn't execute it stuff. Yeah, look, it's... it's just fun to see a different reaction because, you know, we've been watching his press conferences for over 10 years, Nick. It's been a long time. So, Nick, I just want to mention
hundreds of press conferences.
It's a bit disappointing. I really wanted to debut after a win where people are a bit more exciting, but we do have a new theme song from Aaron Cook Music. Thank you very much, Aaron. We'll talk about it in the next few weeks, hopefully after a win when we get a few more listeners because the listenership will be down this week. But, yeah, the concept behind it, I think it's fairly self-explanatory, but we wanted to get something that showed the journey from sort of darkness to light and, you know, remembering the bad times because they made us who we are.
The hero's journey.
Yeah, exactly, and so we appreciate it. You know, even now when we're 3-3, and we've still got a lot of premiership heroes to watch. So, I've listened to it 50 times, and we'll mention it again. But Aaron, thank you from Aaron Cook Music because I find it stirring.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tiger Talk.
It starts with a vision. If we're not locked into that, might as well pack up and go home.
Talking about three flags by 2020.
Fitzroy is podium or finals with you guys.
And after 13 straight losses, the Tigers are no longer toothless. Their first win for 2010, Carmichael Hunt. Look at Jeffrey, he does. Carlton are on their way to Sydney.
West on to kick a goal from here. He does. What a start. Can he just slow? He's gone. No free kick, sure.
First preliminary final in 16 long years, and they have done it. They've won. The Tigers are into the prelim.
Tigers.